I mean, the waves, you know, 300 or 400 feet high, and it just swamped the boat eventually. Well, now this, of course, is what's happening in America today. I mean, we have a massive debt here in the United States that cannot be paid off. We have an oil crisis, or whether it's real or imagined really doesn't matter, because there is a shortage of world oil, certainly with increasing demand coming from China, increasing demand coming from India, and it will take us years, even if we were to go at this right immediately and open up all the oil pipelines up into Alaska and the various oil supplies up there and open oil wells here in the United States. It would take as many years to be able to even meet our own needs as a nation. And then, of course, we have the pension funds, which are on the verge of collapse. Well, I'm not going to tell you what Mr. Popilov is going to say, because he's right here with us now. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Well, Stan, thanks for inviting me back.
Well, tell us, you know, as things unfold, or you've written this treatise on the perfect financial storm, are all the various parts of that storm, all the various hurricanes and tornadoes in place?
Well, I'll tell you, not to overuse that analogy, but it seems like it's coming to play. I mean, if I was to tell you, oh, let's say 3 or 4 years ago, that we would see oil prices near $50 a barrel, you would have probably told me I was crazy. But we do have, you know, almost a perfect storm developing in energy, and Matt Simmons, a well-known oil expert, has written about this. We've got almost a similar storm developing in the financial markets between currencies, and specifically the weakness of the dollar, the economy, and then also the stock markets. And then over on the geopolitical side, it just doesn't seem to be getting any worse. So you have this convergence of all these different storm fronts that seem to be coming into play. What makes this sort of unusual, but it goes to show you that sometimes maybe history doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme, is what's taking place right now, for example, on the weather front. If you take a look at the hurricane, I guess, Ivan, which is now hitting the Gulf States, if, you know, what was the likelihood that you would see three hurricanes back-to-back hit landfall within a period of 6 weeks? But it's happening.
As we see this thing happening, one of the things that really bothers me is the fact that we're having to borrow from other countries just to pay our current debts, current account balances. We've never been in a position like that before, have we?
Well, we were in that position, for example, in the 19th century, but the difference in the 19th century and, let's say, where we are today, Stan, is in the 19th century, America was financing the building of this country from overseas, but we were building.
Hold that thought right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Jim Popilov, who writes a financial newsletter, does a radio program with our good friend John Loeffler, and he has, I think something like 30 or more thousand people who listen to his internet program every week as he discusses what's happening financially. And I've learned through the years that Jim has an excellent grasp of what's going on. And we were just asking him about the situation where we are today. Now, most people don't understand that the United States is having to borrow about $1.6 to $1.7 billion a day from foreign people, from foreigners, just to meet our current account deficits because we're spending so much. They say, well, gee, we're only a deficit now. It's much less than we thought, $422 billion this year. That's almost a half a trillion dollars. And that doesn't include what we're going to steal for Social Security or the money that they're going to be giving for the storm victims or the money I suspect they're going to be, asking immediately after the elections to finance the war in Iraq. So we've got real problems. And Jim was saying, well, we did have problems many, many years ago during the 19th century when we were certainly building America. Why don't you just cover that whole issue?
Well, in the 19th century, as a growing nation, we didn't have enough accumulated savings to build the expansion of the country and the infrastructure. So when we began putting in the roads, bridges, canals, and railroads, and start building our factories, we were borrowing money. But Stan, the difference between the 19th century and what we're doing today, in the 19th century, we were putting in or building our capital stock in terms of things that were going to make this country stronger, going to help us develop industrially. which is what we saw in the first part of the 20th century. Now, we are borrowing to make welfare payments. We are borrowing to make Social Security payments. We are borrowing to fund day-to-day consumption. The problem is, if once these things are consumed, there's nothing left. When you build a road, or you build a bridge, or you build a factory, the factory, the road, and the bridge still stand. So they help in transportation. They help you make things. And that's probably the big difference between, let's say, where we are today than where we were in the 19th century. There's a big, big difference between building for investment and building up your capital stock versus consumption.
Well, my concern is that we are shipping so many of our factories, we're shipping so many of our industries overseas, and we're shifting from a manufacturing basis, which, of course, creates things and creates wealth, to a consumption status where so many of our jobs are already domestic jobs. And hold just a minute, and we want to bring our other stations back on with us here. Well, Mr. Poplava was saying that during the 19th century, we were borrowing money from other countries, but that was to build our roads and our infrastructure and our manufacturing base. But today, as I added, I think that, of course, we are doing away with our manufacturing base. We are outsourcing our jobs. We're setting our factories overseas. And, of course, as we shift from being a manufacturing nation to being primarily a consuming nation, you cannot survive as a great nation if you're not manufacturing, can you?
It's very, very tough unless you have some proprietary technology. But, I mean, if you look at where we were 50 years ago, 30% of the American economy was manufacturing-based. Today, it's half that. And one of the reasons, Stan, that we have not seen the trade deficits come down, in fact, they're setting new records, even though the dollar came down, is much of our trade deficit is now structural. In other words, if we don't make the tractors here and the cars here as much as we used to, we import them. We're no longer, for example, energy independent anymore. So with each passing decade, we find ourselves importing more oil, more natural gas, more of our raw materials and natural resources that we once used to produce here. So one reason this trade deficit has gotten to be as bad as it is structural in nature, and it's one reason it hasn't gone down.
Isn't this a lot of this created? In other words, we certainly could develop our natural resources. We're not allowed to because the environmentalists don't want us to. And we could develop our timber, but we're not allowed to cut the trees down because they might hurt an owl or something. We're not allowed, of course, to develop our energy resources because, after all, we'd be violating the earth. And we can't even develop the energy resources up in on the North Slope where nobody lives other than some Eskimos who would love to have us develop it because we might, interfere with a moth or something of the sort. So basically, hasn't a lot of our inability to be self-sufficient been created by the environmental movement, which seems to be funded by people of great wealth who seem to have a different agenda or a different worldview?
Well, I think the environmental movement has certainly contributed to this because, for example, let's take the situation in oil. There are a lot of pockets of natural gas that the companies would like to get to, but they're prevented from. And if we take look at the Alaska North Slope ANWR. I've seen pictures of ANWR, and what you see in the commercials are not that prestige or pristine forest with the white snow and the deer and the antelope.
There are no forests up there at all. I mean, there's nothing north, no forest north of Anchorage. It's all permafrost.
Yeah, and it's mud, mosquito-infested tundra. And I can't help but believe, Stan, with the advancements that we've made in oil technology over the last 3.5 decades, that we can't extract those resources and do it in a way that protects the environment. I find that argument hard to buy.
Well, it's almost as if somebody is trying to undermine our ability to be self-sufficient. Any efforts to do mining in this country are effectively blocked. And, any time they try to, get minerals out of the ground, we can't do that. You're the UN heritage site or something, a foolish thing of this sort. Your wealth comes from your timber and from your agriculture and from your mining and from your manufacturing. And every one of those is under attack in America today.
There's over 7,000 environmental lawsuits that have been brought against energy companies, power companies, and yet they don't want us going to war. They don't like it that we're using oil. Well, we've unfortunately, Western society is a carbon-based society. And more importantly, Stan, I think in the next two, maybe within the end of this decade, we may reach a peak in oil production. And we've got about 5 to 10 years to start moving forward on alternative sources of fuel, or we're going to have all kinds of problems here. And this is one thing I do not see being addressed. I mean, it should be number one on the political agenda in terms of making America, this country, energy independent. We used to be.
Well, of course, if you want to have an industrialized society, you have to have energy. If you want to destroy the industrial base of a nation, then you make it so that they can't get energy and they won't have ready or cheap sources of energy. It's almost as if there's some people who have a different agenda. They have a different worldview. They don't necessarily want America to be a great nation or a great industrial nation. They see nothing wrong with China and all its pollution. It's the biggest polluter in the world now. And all of these Kyoto protocols that they want us to sign don't affect China at all.
No, and that was probably one of the reasons why the president didn't sign it and why a lot of nations didn't sign it, because it was very skewed. I don't think that was really addressing the energy issue. Because you can't have one nation, follow one set of standards and another nation gets its own different standards. It doesn't work that way if you're concerned about the environment. And more importantly, a prosperous economy is an economy that can do something about the environment. I mean, at one point in time, we did have polluted rivers, and I give a lot of credit to the environmental movement for moving to clean up some of this. But, I mean, if you look at weak economies, whether it's in Asia, whether it's in Russia or South America, environmentalism is a luxury when you don't have the money to pay for things.
Well, tell me, what's going to be happening to the market? Certainly the market seems to be hovering, you know, about 10,300, and the NASDAQ is, you know, really hasn't been doing very well. I mean, it's been staying pretty much in a range there of maybe a 400 or 500 points, really for almost a year now. What do you anticipate happening? Is this market being kept up artificially just so we won't be too upset before the election? Or do you think that really are major market forces that are determining the price of stock?
Well, I think anybody that is looked at the markets know that governments are intervening in the market. When the Fed moves in one direction or another to alter interest rates, it's intervening in the marketplace. We know, for example, that the Japanese and the Chinese are buying the bulk of U.S. Treasuries. So that's intervening in the bond market, and it's intervening in the currency market at the same time. And there is some degree of speculation. The same is occurring in the stock market. The interesting thing about where I think we could be heading is that I think that at some point there's some precipitating event. I don't know if it's a financial blow-up, a money center bank that goes under or bankrupt like the airlines are doing now, or it's a terrorist attack that would trigger a debt.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.